I've been asked to say a few words about two of the many facets of William Boccheano. First, there's William Boccheano, the teacher. You've all heard the stories or experienced spending hours and hours in a small room with a teaching and performing legend. When you think of Mr. Boccheano's teaching, what's the first thing you probably think of? Mouthpieces, of course. He quite often had three or four mouthpieces on his stand during a concert and would sometimes switch them every other phrase. He loved to experiment with them, but I think that the stories of him switching student mouthpieces are slightly over-exaggerated. Just slightly. If you were playing well, he probably, most of the time, would leave you alone. But I can quite often remember, if you had a bad week, he would get that gleam in his eye, reach in his pocket, and pull out a mouthpiece and say, "Hey, Soper, why don't you try this one?" Anyway, it never worked, but for me, anyway. But the other thing that you think about with Mr. Boccheano is transposition. Everyone knows that if you took a lesson from Boccheano, you had to know how to transpose. Some may think that it was just transposition for the sake of learning how to transpose, but it was much more than that. Mr. Boccheano viewed transposition as a tool for making music. He looked at it as a way to be comfortable playing a different key trumpet to make a phrase really soar. He wanted us to make beautiful music easily, not have to struggle trying to play it on the wrong instrument. He also used transposition as a method to train our ears to hear a pitch before actually playing it. Of course, when you think of Mr. Boccheano's teaching, you think about rhythm. I can still feel him tapping the subdivisions on my arm while I was playing a lesson. Some of the things that I vividly remember him saying, and I quite often took notes from lessons. When I'd hear a quote, I would go home and I'd write it down. But some of the things that I remember most were, "Vibrato shouldn't be artificial. It comes from the heart. It is a reflection of the soul. In fact, all music comes from our soul and is part of our being. Every note that you play should be an extension of the human voice singing to God." The second and most important facet of Mr. Boccheano is simply William Boccheano the man. When I think of Bill as a friend, the first word that comes to mind is gentleman. He was always warm, friendly, polite, and willing to spend time listening to others. He was also very humble. I never saw him take advantage of the fact that he was famous or be overly impressed with the fact that he really was a legend among trumpet players. Students from around the world came to study with him. Still, he always had his feet firmly planted on the ground. He did some amazing things musically in his life. Once when we were sitting in the shade of one of our giant pine trees, I asked him if he remembered any particularly difficult days performing. He sat there for a second, then he smiled and he said, "Of course, playing the Bach Brandenburg Concerto on an F trumpet." For those of you who are trumpet players, you know how hard that would be. He sat there for another second. He said, "You know, I was a little worried about that one." And rightfully so. Also, before the days of digitally splicing in a phrase or even a note, he told me about recording Stravinsky's Petrushka twice in one day with two different orchestras and two different conductors, and then playing a concert in the evening. When he told me about that, he modestly said, "Yes, I guess that was a pretty difficult day." I would imagine. Bill had a wonderfully dry sense of humor. He loved to tease, and when he got that gleam in his eye, watch out. He always seemed to have a positive attitude, even near the end of his life, when he was not feeling well and having difficulty breathing, he tried not to complain. He was at peace with himself and God. Bill loved coming to our house for lunch or a picnic. We told him that one of our guest rooms was reserved for him, and he always asked about his room. I miss those lazy days of relaxed storytelling, his incredible memory. He never forgot a detail, whether it was talking about what the trumpet section had for dinner in 1947 in Raleigh, North Carolina, when they were on tour, or what mouthpiece the student at Juilliard played in 1953. He just had so many stories, and they never seemed to repeat one. We all miss that gleam in his eye. We miss the ease with which he moved comfortably from one new person to another. We miss the fact that he never had a bad thing to say about anyone. We miss his humility, but most of all, we miss him. Earlier, Ray mentioned Bill's biographer, Brian Shook, who deserves credit for putting the slideshows together. I want to also take this moment just to thank Juilliard's Director of Executive Projects, Tricia Ross, the consummate professional for her expertise, patience, and tireless organizational skills in coordinating this tribute. Also, special thanks should go to Bob Taibbi, I hope I pronounced that right, Juilliard's Director of Recording, and Alex Amante for their editing skills and keeping the slideshows running smoothly. In this final tribute, which you are about to see, you'll hear Bill's voice in some excerpts from an interview with Martin Buxbaum during a 1967 concert intermission. Thank you.